session number 9253, reel 7.
Could you tell me how you first heard that war was declared?
I have no clear memory of it, no clear memory at all, because up to before we went down to Newbegin, we honestly thought that we might eventually go over to Ireland. Well, that was just forgotten, and we accepted the fact that we were not going to Ireland because war was declared on Germany. And then...
What did you think of it when war was declared? Were you pleased?
Well, we were territorial soldiers, and we had been trained for the job. And I think we didn't have any special feeling on the matter. We just accepted the fact that we were a territorial soldier, and we were ready, as young fellows were, to do our job wherever it happened to be, whether it was Germany or elsewhere. Personally, me, I had no special views about Germany. I knew nothing of them. I mean, living in Northumberland in a mining area, we had newspapers, but we were not really concerned with outside of Northumberland. We did concern ourselves about matters in the county, but outside of Northumberland, we had very little contact with the rest of England, for that matter. At that time, I'd never been to London, never travelled very far, and we just sort of accepted the fact that the authorities who were in charge of the country had declared war on Germany, and that was all. No special views.
Was there any sort of patriotic fervour in Newbegin, or any celebrations went on August 4th?
No, nothing like that at all. Everything was just accepted. Now, we found out that at Newbegin, we were there to guard the cable station, which stretched across the North Sea over to Norway. A cable station went over to Norway. So on the seafront, right in the middle of the town, was a promenade, of course. And then back from the promenade was this square building which housed the cable where it came into England. And then, of course, I expect there would be cables or other lines away to somewhere else. But there was nothing else but that one cable station where the cable came to land and was housed in this building. So a 24-hour guard was placed on the building. There was always a policeman too. The policeman generally sat behind. Sometimes there was two policemen, sometimes only the one, but there was a 24-hour guard. So we made very good friends with the police when we were there, because we were billeted. My particular pub was just about a couple of hundred yards away from the building. Then Bank Holiday came, and that was the day war was declared on Germany. I well remember that bank holiday. There I was, marching up and down in front of the cable station, rifle on my shoulder, marched about 30 or 40 yards, halted, grounded my rifle, turned around, stood a moment or two, shouldered my rifle, marched again the 30 or 40 yards, in front of the cable station, halted and did the same. Did that for my two-hour duty. And then one of my friends would take over. And down in front of the promenade, was all the bank holiday makers on the lovely sands at Newbiggin. The lovely sands, the bay, it's a big bay at Newbiggin, with two arms stretching out into the sea, and in between a bay and lovely sands. Well, lovely golden sands, about a mile and a half apart, the two heads of the bay. And there would be thousands and thousands of holidaymakers from all the district around, and with special trains in from Newcastle, it helped to swell the crowds on the promenade. When suddenly, as I marched up and down in front of that promenade, I heard a voice. "Jack, put that rifle down and come and talk to me." And it was my girlfriend, who had come down for the weekend, didn't know anything about me, been called up, had gone to my house and I wasn't there. Mother told her he was at Newbiggin and he was called up for war. And there was my girlfriend down on the sands asking me to come down on the sands and talk to her. And I was marching up and down. I may have paused a few minutes longer at each time I stopped before I turned around to march back again. And out of the corner of my mouth, I says, "You'll have to wait till my turn of duty is over." So she waited down on the sands. And then I was changed. The guard was changed. And I went down and talked to her. And that's how she had come down from Newcastle. Lived in Ashendon, of course, along with me, where I lived. But was in service in Newcastle, had come down for the bank holiday Monday to see me. And there I was. We'll never forget, neither her nor I forget that. My girlfriend and I remained sweethearting for some years before the war. 3 or 4 years before the war we sweethearted. We used the word sweethearting in Northumberland instead of courting. And eventually we married in 1918, of which I'll later tell you the story of my marriage day. A very important day, and a lot happened that day, which I'll tell you later.
What did she think of you being, called up and possibly sent overseas to war?
Well, she just like everybody else accepted it. No special feelings among the matter, and I didn't either. I mean, we just accepted it all. That's all the way through. We just accepted it.
Did things change much during the rest of the 3 weeks you were there?
No, just a regular routine. My girlfriend was only down for the day, and I saw quite a lot of her that day on the sands, but I had to take my turn of duty of marching up and down in front of the cable station.
Were you a bit of a hero to the crowds, or what was their reaction?
Oh, yes. All the soldiers, we were all very smart and very conscious, every one of us, that were marching up and down their guarding the cable station. And the NCOs tried to make a little more of it as well, because I remember at night they had all who were stationed on that part. You see, I don't know how many soldiers there was in charge of the cable station, but other soldiers were in part somewhere else. There was only a small party of us in charge of the cable station. And the kids, youngsters especially, would be standing down on the sands, looking up at us soldiers, you know, dressed in all full army clothing. We wore putties then too, and rifle on our shoulder. And we were very conscious of that fact that they were all staring at us and so on. I think every youngster on the sands came and had a look at us. Yes.
Did you think that you would be involved in the war? Did you think you'd be sent out, or did you think the war would be fought by the regular army?
I had no thoughts on the matter. I had no thoughts on the matter at all. We just accepted everything from day to day as it came.
Did you think
now, eventually, we were there 3 weeks only, our special service section of the Territorial Army. We were 3 weeks at Newbiggin, and then we were taken to Gosforth Park, where tents already had been erected, bell tents had been erected on the green sward of Gosforth Park.
Is that at Newcastle?
That was still summertime, so we had a grand time in Gosforth Park, camping there, and we're fairly well fed, and we're very active, as I said before, up at 7 o'clock, with the PT instructors, and then full of army work during the day. And then we were... Gosforth Park, by the way, is some 6 miles from Newcastle itself. 6 miles. And between Newcastle and Gosforth Park was the old tramway system. The old tramway system... a double-decker, and they had a cable strung overhead right along the road from Newcastle to Gosforth Park. The tram car itself had an arm, a long arm about 14 or 15 feet, which the conductor would swing for when he arrived at Gosforth Park to turn around. He would swing the whole thing around this arm and put it on the other side. And I think it was some sort of electric current that drove the tram car. Double-decker, open deck, open top deck, no cover on the top deck, open deck. As indeed, I found out later, the London buses were the same. They had open decks, learnt later when we went to France, they were the same type.
Was your training at Gosforth Park then pretty much the same as it had been in
weekend
the
camps? Yes, and fortnightly camps. Yes, all the training at Gosforth Park was similar to the training we had in our fortnightly camps and weekend camps. PT in the morning, breakfast, bayonet fighting, and drill and other exercises in the morning. Afternoons after midday meal, always route marches and exercises, all kinds around Gosforth Park. We got to know Gosforth, the district around Gosforth Park, we got to know it very, very well. Especially me and my battalion scouts, because often we were not with the battalion. We were on our own as the enemy and so on. And we sort of got to know more about it than the rest of the battalion. We all thought that in any case, yes.
Did your training take any account of what was going on in France? Did you start, for instance, learning how to dig trenches?
No. No. The first... We never learned anything about trenches. We learned bayonet fighting. And we really thought that when we went to France, if we went not to France, didn't know anything about France in those days. We had no thoughts of France and Flanders or anything in those days. But we were preparing for war, wherever we happened to be sent. And we thought that our fighting would be bayonet fighting and rifle shooting. There was a section attached to our battalion of machine guns, but I had nothing to do with them, so I know nothing. You see, I can only talk about things I know, and the machine gun section, all I know about them is that they recruited some of the best shots in the battalion and made them a section on their own of machine gunners, the same as they did later. When they came along and said, you are minors, Well, some of you volunteered to be a tunneler, joined the Tulln squadron, but that was when we went to Belgium.
So, as far as you were concerned, you didn't know anything about the nature of modern war and about heavy artillery and
No, we never saw any big guns. Never knew anything about... In those days, at that time, there was no big guns in Gosforth Park.
So did you think that war was, in a way, a progression of the Boer War and what you'd heard about it?
No, we knew it was altogether different to the Boer War, of course, because the Boer War was with the Zulus, and the Zulus were natives, not in any uniform. All they wore was necklaces of bones and a loincloth and a headgear and a spear and so on. No, totally different.
But you didn't really know what it was like. What did you think when the first casualty returns started coming back? When you first heard about the casualties in France?
I don't think we thought very much of it. You see, we didn't hear very much about casualties because the Northumberlands had never been out at war. We were still in England, the Northumberlands. And there was no other regiments from Northumberland.
So it didn't?
There was no other regiments attached to Northumberland, but the Northumberland Fusiliers, and we hadn't been abroad then. No.
You've met together for fortnightly camps once a year, the battalion, but really you were separate companies usually. How did the companies knit together when they were all joined together? And how did the battalion join up, did it?
Oh, yes. Well, you see, we were... First of all, we were Northumberlands. We were, you know, all proud of our county. And I'm still very proud to be a Northumbrian. Some people say you're the Geordie. Geordie is a term given to the Tynesiders. Well, actually, I'm not a Geordie, but if anybody says you're the Geordie, I just accept the fact that they think we are, and I'll just let them think so. No, I'm a Northumbrian. I'm proud to be a Northumbrian, same as all the other fellows from Northumberland. I was proud to be in the Northumberland Fusiliers, and still am very proud to be the Northumberland Fusiliers. A little while ago, in the amalgamation of all the Fusilier regiments in the whole of the country, County Fusiliers are amalgamated now, and I was selected, I have a letter in my files there, from the officer in Newcastle in charge of Newcastle Northumberland Fusiliers Battalion Records Office, stating that I had been selected to represent the Northumberland Fusiliers at the amalgamation of all the Fusilier regiments at the Tower of London, which was held in September. My name was being considered for the lunch which was to be held on that weekend, but I never heard no more, so my name must have been misplaced, or I wasn't chosen to represent the Northumberland Fusiliers.
So the companies knit together well, did they?
Oh, yes. It was a great loyalty and a great feeling. We're all Northumbrians. That's all you needed, yes.
And this feeling extended to the whole of the 149th Brigade, did it?
Absolutely. Oh, yes. We never saw much of them, you know. You see, in the fortnightly camp, that's the only time the brigade would be together, at a fortnightly camp before the war. The four battalions, the 4th, 5th, 6th and 7th battalions in the Northumberland's territorials, we were the only territorial battalions in the Northumberland Fusiliers. As I've explained it before, the 1st battalion was a regular battalion, regular soldiers, 2nd battalion saw, the 3rd battalion was a reserve battalion for the 1st and 2nd, and then the 4 battalions of territorials. Then after that, when the war broke out, they recruited a battalion called the Commercials in Newcastle and its surrounding, The commercial battalion were all composed of shop assistants and office workers, not miners. And then there was another battalion called the Tyneside Scottish Battalion. Anyone who had, that was all those sort of tricks to get fellas into the army when the war came along. Tyneside Scottish Battalion, the Tyneside Irish Battalion. We didn't have Tyneside Welsh, but we had the Tyneside Scottish and Tyneside Irish and the commercials. And they would be the 8th, 9th and 10th. And then after that, the 11th up to 51 regiments before the end of the war. Northumberland Fusiliers had 51 regiments. I've got a list of them there from the war. I wrote to the War Office and asked once. And there was 51 regiments of the Northumberland Fusiliers, but they were recruited from all parts of England. At London, some time ago, the beginning of this year, I'm a member of the Western Front Association. There was a chappie there who was speaking. He was the speaker. On some aspect of the First World War, and he mentioned in his talk that he had been with the Northumberland Fusiliers. So immediately after the meeting, I went and got a hold of him. I says, "What do you know about the Northumberland Fusiliers?" I says, "You mentioned that in your talk." He says, "I know nothing about them, really. I was only 3 months with them." I says, "Who were the officers? What company were you in?" He says, "I can't remember." And he's an author, he's a writer, he writes war books. He couldn't remember those 3 months with the territory. I says, "They haven't impressed you when you were with them." He says, "Well, I don't know, I can't think anything about them." So, everybody doesn't feel the same as me about the Northumberland Fusiliers.
As your training went on, did you feel you were getting to be ready for war? Was your training effective?
Oh yes, we felt ready for war, oh yes. When war did come, you know, territorial camps, we felt ready then for anything. Yes.
So before you trained, when war started, you were confident?
Oh, yes. Oh, yes.
How did you get on with the local population around Gosforth Park?
Never saw them. The only time we saw was in the mining villages away from Gosforth Park. Beyond Gosforth Park is Northumberland. Between Newcastle and Gosforth Park, well, I just passed through on the tram. It's the only time I ever saw anything of the town of Gosforth, which is a very large town outside of Newcastle. Didn't see anything of any of them. What we did see, and me and my battalion scouts had more opportunities perhaps than the ordinary soldier in the battalion, because we did move around a lot on manoeuvres and so on, than more so than the ordinary soldier. And we got to know the people in the mining villages around Cramlington and Seg Hill and these places in Northumberland. And all mining villages and miners as a rule are very kindly type of people, especially among their own kind. So we had always had a good reception and always ready, "Would you like a cup of tea?" And of course we always said yes.
And were you allowed out at night from Gosforth Park camp?
Oh yes, 5 o'clock. Well, the brigade was camping in Gosforth Park, the 4th, 5th, 6th and 7th. And in those days, in our army uniform, we wore numerals on both shoulders. 7 NF, 7th Northumberland Fusiliers. If you were in the 6th Battalion, you would be a 6th NF, 5th and 4th. Well, what they did was, at Gosforth Park, a very rigid camp was a guard was set around the camp, you know. Very easily, of course, because Gosforth Park is surrounded by heavy brick, heavy stone walls and a big entrance to it. And only one battalion would be allowed out at night. If the fourth was allowed out at night, I beg your pardon, only one battalion was kept in, rather. The other three battalions would be allowed out. Now, sometimes they would say only certain battalions were allowed out. Well, that was easy solved. Me and some of my pals, we went down into Newcastle, went to the second-hand army shop, and we bought new models for all the four battalions, 4th, 5th, 6th and 7th. So whenever our own battalion was kept in on duty, and if we didn't have any duties in the camp, all we did was change the numbers to the 6th or the 5th or the 4th. And we just, the fellas on guard just looked at your shoulder to see what battalion you were and they let you out. So there was no restriction as far as we personally, a few of us, wise enough to have these numerals.
What did you do when you got out?
Well, in Newcastle, my girlfriend, of course, from Ashendon, was in service. Now, that meant when she left school, her mother provided her with two uniforms, a house servant's uniform with a hat and bib and bonnet and white aprons and black skirts and all the rest of it, you know. And all the girls from Ashendon, when they left school, there was no work for girls in Ashendon, so they all went into service, mostly in Gosforth, and between Gosforth and Newcastle. Now, in Newcastle, there's a road called Gosforth Road. My girlfriend seemed to be in Gosforth Road all the time. Big, three-storied buildings, stone-built buildings, where the wealthy people of Newcastle lived. There's many parts of Newcastle, of course, like Biker, which were very poverty-stricken, and I wouldn't like to have lived in it. I've seen them once or twice, a few times. The streets are very close together, and narrow streets and all the rest. But my girlfriend, she could always demand a good place, as they call it. A place meant a place where you were in service. And they would be allowed out one night a week. Only allowed them out one night a week. Would be Saturday night, you see, or Sunday night. Generally, my girl, she could